The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the last 60 years. The 0% financing offers right now at Bill Curry Ford are incredible. See them all at BillCurryFord.com. And our thanks to Big Storm Beer. You can actually enjoy Big Storm food and coffee right in the Big Storm Cafe inside Bill Curry Ford, their showroom a mile north of Raymond James Stadium. And Big Storm Beer, as everybody should know, is Florida's finest craft beer. Get to BigStormBrewery.com to find it near you. And our thanks to Florida's Elite Restoration. They completely understand the devastating loss caused by wind, fire, mold, all kinds of disasters. Time is of the essence when you have this kind of problem. Get to Florida'sElitereStoration.com. Call them 24 hours. They'll come out free, and you'll get a response within 2 hours. Florida'sElitereStoration.com.
He was prepared to take the Glazers' money. This could be a pleasure. What happened? Did he slice an apple and cut a vein? You ain't a football player. You didn't take it seriously. What a pressed Cuban. Woo! And don't get me started on Blaine Gabbert.
The sage of Tampa Bay sports is not taking a summer vacation. He is the king of Pasco County, the baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, Uncle Ira and Cosmo's dad. He is Ira Kaufman, the name on this podcast. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee D. Kemper of Joe Bucks Fan is here. The whole thing is presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford for the last 60 years. Ira, how are you?
I'm a little bent out of shape, Steve, because you've gone a couple of weeks. You don't mention top 50. I'm not even sure if I'm in the top 100 right now. But Lee, the phrase of the day, and we're going to keep going with this theme, family jewels. Family jewels. And by that, I mean, on Wednesday, it's a big day for Cosmo. He doesn't know it yet, but he's going in. They want him in at 7:30 in the morning. That's when they do surgery. He's going to get clipped. And by that, I don't mean he's getting a haircut. Cosmo's getting clipped at the age of 6 or 7 months. And I don't have the nerve to tell him, gentlemen. I don't know if it's going to change his temperament. We'll see. He might not pee as much all over the place. But we've got the carpets cleaned. The gates are up. He ain't going anywhere outside of his little area. And the backyard, and that's it. He got to keep these carpets clean, and we'll see what this little clip joint does to Cosmo's personality.
Ira, you got to learn how to start your podcast off with something positive. You come out 1 week and you talk about the dog taking a leak all over your house.
Then I got the handyman.
Dead as a rock. Now you're coming out saying the guy's getting your dog's getting a vasectomy. Come on, Ira, be positive.
Now, wait a minute.
Don't chase your listeners away.
Wait a minute, Lee. This could be a positive.
You're not going to have another puppy?
It could be less scratching, less jumping up, less peeing. This could be a pleasure. You never know what the heck the reaction is going to be. I remember when I got through doing what they're going to do to Cosmo, I was a totally different person the next day, too.
So that's what happened.
Start your podcast with something positive, like, hey, Cosmo loves to eat those sauerkraut sandwiches at Big Storm. I came with the Rubens.
The Rubens. He does love the Rubens. There's no question about it.
That's much more positive.
Just in case anyone is concerned what happens at Ira's house, Cosmo is a Boston Terrier. He's a dog. He's not a human. I just want to get that out of the way. Ira,
thank you, Steven. Thank you.
Let's jump right into one thing, football, real fast, because this is big news in a lot of ways, but probably not the way you're thinking, Ira. The Patriots just signed Cam Newton. Okay, Cam Newton is the new quarterback of the Patriots, which I want to ask you two questions. One, does that light an extra fire under Tom Brady, as if he needs an extra fire? Two, what does that say about Jameis Winston, that Bill Belichick could have had Jameis for peanuts?
That's an excellent point, Steven. I'll start with number two. As far as the Winston front with Foxborough, Lee, not only did they pass on Winston, he has no health concerns. Zero. Zero health concerns, unless you want to say mental and going through your progressions. No arm problems. And Belichick passed. Could have had him. It certainly wasn't a financial decision. He didn't feel Winston was overpriced at the time. So, yes, I would chalk it up as another slap. But you got to remember, Lee, we're talking about a former league MVP here. I mean a league MVP. And carried the Panthers into the Super Bowl on his back and lost to a hell of a Denver defense that day. But Newton was a monster. Steve, check me if I'm wrong. I believe the game that got them into the Super Bowl was, didn't they kick the hell out of Arians' Cardinals? I believe they did the week before. It was like 49-7. It was awful. Palmer threw six interceptions. That didn't help right in front of Arians, right in front of Arians' mug. But as far as lighting the fire under Brady, no, I'm not going there, Steve. I mean, do we need any more example of how geeked up Brady is? He's at the point where people are taking slaps at Brady for being over-exuberant, you know, not following the Players Association. So I don't think, you know, Brady said he's going to have fun. Nothing's going to change that. So I don't see Newton in New England. I'm not sure Newton's going to win that job. It depends if he's healthy or not. He may not be ready in training camp. So we shall see. But I don't think it's going to have any impact on Brady's attitude towards winning a Super Bowl in Tampa, but it is another slap, Lee, at Mr. Jameis Winston.
Your response to Steve's question brings up three things for me. Number one about Jameis, and I'll just be quick, because this is, you know, he's no longer with the Bucks. It's the Bucks podcast. I'm starting to think one or two things was going on. Number one, there's something out there about him we don't know about.
Right.
That's number one. Number two, I think Jameis was picky. You know, I'm confident some teams called him up and he said no, or his agent said no. And the third thing is, Michael Lombardi said this about 2 weeks ago. You know, Lombardi was like, he was looking at Chris Sims' top 40 quarterbacks, and he would put Jameis in the top 15. And he said, trust me, no one's been a bigger critic of Jameis Winston than me. He goes, well, we're talking about a guy who led the NFL in pass. Trubisky was one guy that he mentioned. He goes, I know in a heartbeat I'd take Jameis over Trubisky. So would I, by the way. And Lombardi just couldn't believe that Jameis' stock has dropped that much. He kept saying over and over, we're talking about the guy who led the league in passing. That's the only time in the Super Bowl era that a guy who led the NFL in passing didn't return to his team the next season. That's never happened before. And you talk about Brady, and you kind of made a offhand comment. I don't know if it was offhand that, you know, people will come after Brady because of the NFLPA advisory that he's ignoring it. Man, people are crucifying this guy. They're acting like this guy is Jesus Christ, and just by raising his right hand, he can cure people. And because he's practicing, that people are going to die come December because of his irresponsibility. It's outrageous. I mean, Russell Wilson's doing the same thing Tom Brady's doing. Have you heard anyone in a national outlet like USA Today torch Russell Wilson? No, you have not. Why? It just blew my mind that people are going after Brady like this.
I think part of it might be the baggage. Now, you say, what baggage? He's got six Super Bowl rings, and he was in three other ones. Well, people remember Deflategate. They think he's looking for an edge, although nothing was definitively proven. He did get slapped down by the National Football League. They found him a reluctant witness and worse than that, destroying a cell phone. That didn't look good for Tom Brady in that circumstance. Steve, the fans have a long memory. They remember that, and I think they try to factor that into Brady thumbing his nose at the NFLPA.
I agree with you, Ira. It is out of hand, especially for me anyway. You got baseball. The Rays are starting up on Wednesday. You know, baseball's starting. The NBA is getting back. Major League Soccer is out there about to return, and they acknowledge that they have some guys who've already tested positive despite they're going to this bubble situation. You know, it's part of what's going on in society. And the way Brady has been singled out as a lunatic and someone who's going to literally kill people is really out of hand. But
Lightning already having their camp?
Lightning and other NHL teams have been practicing, but they haven't announced a start date yet. They haven't figured that out as far as the season. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's back doing their thing. Ira, I'm sure you were watching women's tennis over the weekend, probably glued to the television.
You know, Steve, getting back to Newton for a second, I think people have been a little quick to discard Cam Newton. I got a good enough memory Steve, even though I might be 97 years old, I still remember the first half of the 2018 season. It's not that long ago. I believe the Panthers were 6-2. They looked very, very good, and they looked like they were going to win that division. At the very least, it was going to be them and the Saints duking it out. They fell apart, and no coincidence, you know, Newton was hurt. He couldn't throw a ball more than 12 yards. Everybody knew it. He probably shouldn't have played. There was a game against the Bucks late in that season, I believe. He shouldn't have been out there.
They completely imploded, and Norv Turner is allegedly the guy who really referred Newton, telling Belichick or the guys up there that he was, MVP type form in 2018. 2018, Ira, he still finished completing 68% of his passes through 13 picks for a guy with a messed up arm. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
And he rushed for just about 500 yards. And so
For me, Newton's mobility is the key, because I said it before. Lee, if he's not a running threat and he's a pocket passer, I think at best he's average at best. It's that dual threat that makes him, a league MVP candidate. We shall see about his legs, but, he may not be Lamar Jackson, but he's right there with Russell Wilson in that second group of mobile quarterbacks that put a tremendous amount of pressure on defenses.
Well, and what's interesting is, the word on the street, if you believe social media, is that Norv Turner helped get Cam a job with the Belichick's.
Right.
Well, Ron Rivera needed a quarterback. He traded the fifth-round pick for the immortal Kyle Allen, Cam's backup.
I guess he didn't know about Newton's physical status at that time.
Or maybe he didn't know.
There's no guarantee Newton's going to start game week one for the Patriots. There's no guarantee that. We shall see. But you know what? He ain't a bad second option when you compare him to and don't get me started on Blaine Gabbert, boys. Don't get me started. And I'm not saying the Bucs should have got Newton. I'm not saying that. I think that would have been a stupid move. But you got to do better. I'm sorry, guys. You got to do better.
Ira, Bill Curry Ford, General Manager Sean Sullivan is there for Buccaneers fans, for anybody. He's the boss, and he will talk to you personally. He will take your emails. He'll take your calls. You can talk to him in person a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. It's not a joke. Sean legitimately will help you. He'll give you an Ira Kaufman discount. He will just guide you through any part of any process he can possibly do. That's the Bill Curry Ford way, family-owned. BillCurryFord.com is the website, BillCurryFord.com. They've got a nationwide lifetime warranty for all their new vehicles and for a vast majority of their pre-owned vehicles, Ira. Not everybody does that. It's part of their commitment to the community, to every single person, treating them like family. Bill Curry Ford, Sean Sullivan. We love Sean. We'll have him back on the podcast as the season takes shape. Ira, I know you were over there hugging everybody, not distancing. I saw those pictures. Shame on you.
Well, I was there, and I met Jennifer, Bill Curry's daughter, and the driving force, and I guess you would say Sean Sullivan's boss. She's a delight. We posed for a picture. I'm waiting for Steve to put the picture out, but he has it. I used the service department for my Cherry Red 2020 Ford Escape, and excellent service. Went back inside, had an Americano coffee, got myself a Cuban to go, of which Sean Sullivan paid for. Good man, Sean. I was going to take out my wad of cash, but the moths flew out of my wallet, so I didn't know what the hell to do. But I'll tell you what, Lee, it gives the Reuben a run for its money. What a pressed Cuban. Woo!
That's my go-to sandwich at Big Stone.
Outstanding.
Ira, Shaq Barrett jumps on Sirius XM NFL Radio, and he puts fans at ease by saying he'll be back. Don't worry, he'll sign the tag if he has to. But he does basically say that he's negotiating a one-year deal that might be more than the franchise tag. And he also says that long-term isn't probably in the cards because of the way the world is and all that stuff. And we get that, no surprise. But you know what? Shaq was talking to Brady Quinn, who says to him, "Hey, Shaq, you're counting down the days to training camp like everybody else, right?" And Shaq says, "I am not counting down the days to training camp." Because he doesn't want to be a part of anything tied to the virus, and he's not looking forward to it. What do you make of that?
Well, Steve, before you get Buck fans jumping off ledges here, you're not saying that Shaq Barrett is going to be you know, foregoing training camp. You're not saying that. What you're saying is, you know, he's not counting down the days for it. I understand that. The heat of August, COVID-19 lurking around. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff in the air.
He was specific to the virus.
Sahara dust, Steve, Sahara dust. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. But
moon dust.
Steve, I got no problem with him wrangling a better one-year deal out of the Bucks than he can right now. I got no problem with that. I think a long-term extension at this time is unlikely. I think it's unlikely. Does not have the body of work. He doesn't have it. Puts together another big season. I don't mean he's got to get 19 and a half sacks. Let him get 12, you know, force three or four fumbles and stay healthy, and he's going to cash in. So Zach Barrett is the least of the worries of Buck fans at this point. I'll tell you what is a worry, Steve, and I didn't realize it until I started really delving into it. And you know what? I got to give DeKemper a little long-term kudos on this one. He's been saying it as long as we've been doing these podcasts at the D-line. And I did the research, Lee. The last nine drafts since 2012. Nine drafts. That's a long time, Lee. You know, the average NFL career is like 4 years. This is nine seasons. The Bucks have used two premium picks. That's the rounds 1 through 3. Only two on defensive linemen. One of them was Noah Spence. So let's just say they've used one. If you get my drift. Vita Vea, who I think is going to be a very good player. I got no problem with Vita Vea. I think he's going to be a cornerstone. I think he is a cornerstone. But the Panthers have used eight in those 9 years. Yeah. Eight. Now, they haven't all worked out, but it shows, you know, shifting priorities in terms of draft philosophy. And the point I'm getting to is, Lee, I look at the Buck defense front. I see Vea. I see Sue. I see Golston. They lost two guys in free agency. They got a bunch of guys that have zero NFL resume. Nunez Roaches hasn't started his 2 years in his Buck as a Buck hasn't started. You know, started very infrequently during his Chiefs career. But I don't see the proven depth up front, Lee. I don't see it. And I wrote a column today saying, you know, besides the ankle and knee injuries, Lee, that accompany so many players' season, Now you got the coronavirus, and I think it's foolhardy. I think it's foolhardy, Steve, to think that the Bucks are going to get through the entire 2020 season without a single player contracting the coronavirus. I think that's wishful thinking. They've already had two players, Steve, with no camp. So I'm just saying, if it hits the D-line in any kind of form, I think the Bucks are in trouble right now.
You know, on that front, though, it'll be the same for every team. You know, you could say the same thing for every team, but I get what you're saying about the depth. It isn't very thick, and, you know, they've traded depth on the D-line for depth at receiver and depth at tight end, unprecedented depth at tight end. So, you know, you can't have depth at every position. That's what Jason Light would tell you if he was calling you.
What's the depth at wide receiver?
Yeah, but in the words of DeKemper, you can't have too many defensive linemen. You just can't. And I'm afraid that I see a specter where we're going to see it show up big time in Tampa this fall.
Yeah, I think the depth at wide receiver, I'm not doing jumping jacks about it, but there are people out there who would say that, you know, Scotty Miller and Justin Watson, they're not rookies. They've shown they can at least play and catch the ball. You know, everybody's high on the rookie, you know, so, I mean, they invested there at least because Ira was talking about investments.
You okay.
Know, you know, and they have they've got so much tight end talent that they don't necessarily need to rely as heavily on the wide receivers. But I know what you're saying, Lee. It's not necessarily impressive. It is a loss from Perriman. We'd all feel better about same thing for the wide receivers. We would feel better if Perriman was here.
Guys, the more I'm thinking about it, the more, you know, and Steve talked about the tight end position. I don't know. I just can't see O.J. Howard on this roster. If Gronkowski shows anything in training camp, I think Brady's going to flourish with Brady. I do. You know, I don't think he's going to be a 1,000-yard receiver. Of course not. But it wouldn't shock me at all to see him catch six, seven touchdowns and Gronkowski catch another six or seven touchdowns
I don't see a lot of room for O.J. Howard, gentlemen. I think it's a luxury maybe they can't afford.
Well, he's still inexpensive, but next year I tend to agree with you, Ira. We're looking at it very likely the cap going down unless the NFLPA and the owners make some kind of backroom deal to, quote-unquote, borrow money from the future to keep it relatively consistent. But if you got to play Chris Godwin in addition to Shaq, in addition to O.J. Howard, I don't know if I'm bringing O.J. Howard back.
And then you got Levante David issue.
There's going to be a lot of questions. I mean, somebody valuable is not going to be with the Bucs next year. Who that is, I don't know. This is going to be some tough decisions, certainly.
Ira, let's jump to the injuries. We've got Jason Pierre-Paul, nice Friday news dump. He's had a knee surgery, of all things. Then we find out hours later, Vita Vea, hand surgery. And they're both questionable for the start of training camp. This is serious stuff. It's surgery. I understand, you know, you don't want to go crazy with it. Guys have cleanup procedures all the time. But what I was really tweaked about, Ira, is I haven't been around as long as you have, Ira, but I do pay attention. Vita Vea has already had hand surgery, but he won't be able to start training camp on time. Can't you just put a club on it? You know, these guys get their hands clubbed all the time. And that's like many weeks from now. Very suspect, Ira.
Well, I'll take it one step further. The first thing that I thought of in both circumstances, I think it begs a question that just blares out at you. Why now? Why not in February? What are you doing? What are you doing? It's almost July. Now you have surgery? What happened? Did he slice an apple and cut a vein?
Like the thing he did? With the Giants and the Cardinals?
I don't want to paint a bleak picture, guys, but, Vita Vea had a calf injury. I believe it was the first day of training camp. First day as a rookie. He was no factor until like 7-8 weeks into the regular season. Nobody thought anything about it. Now, a hand injury is not a strained calf muscle, but nobody thought that strained calf muscle was going to linger like it did. We don't know the specifics of this hand injury, but
I see where you're going, Ira, but I don't think there's anything fishy with Vita Vea, because about 3 weeks ago, Kevin O'Donnell went to some gym and there was Vita Vea pumping weights. Obviously, you can't pump weights with a hurt hand or not much. So I'm just going to take a wild stab and guess this is a fairly recent injury.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if he got a hook in his hand from fishing. I don't know if he did a Mike Matheny and sliced his hand with a hunting knife. I don't know if he blew a hand up, had a weight fall on it. Anybody's guess is as good as mine.
If Vea misses a significant amount of time in training camp, I think that's a problem for Vita Vea. I think that's an issue.
Ira, not everybody's a genius and uses an apple slicer like you do, as opposed to a knife. So you got to know how to work that stuff. It's just interesting, Ira. It's a little bit suspect, but I agree with what Lee said. It's probably something recent, and I just am surprised that you can't run around with a club and in training camp. It doesn't make sense for something that is being put out there as very minor.
It sounds major to me, like a broken hand possibly.
And the JPP thing, that's a serious thing, Ira. Knee surgery is knee surgery. Now, you did say earlier that just to throw it out there, you know, Jameis Winston did have off-season knee surgery, and maybe people have different opinions of that. I still take that seriously. And maybe that hurt him, maybe it didn't. We don't know for sure. But the JPP thing, he's an interesting cat because you don't tell JPP what to do about his health. The Giants dealt with that, and it didn't go their way. I talked to JPP about his decisions with last year with the contract and coming back from neck surgery and who told you what, and he wouldn't discuss sort of who said I could come back, who said I couldn't, and JPP sort of marches to his own drum. I sort of think that he, you know, was working out and realized my knee's not good enough to get through a whole season, and I thought it was, but maybe it's not. It's not good. He's had chronic knee issues now for a couple of seasons in a row.
He has, but he also has a track record of having a very high pain threshold and playing through it. I mean, look what he overcame last season. Lee, if it's a meniscus, which we don't know, but if it's a meniscus, I mean, that's a little knee procedure that tennis players have. They're back on the court in 4 weeks. And that's not a professional athlete, you know, in tip-top shape. So, you know, if it's anything more serious than that, you know, he might miss a good section of training camp. I'm more worried about Vea than JPP for some reason, even though what Steve says, a knee is usually more serious than a hand. I think Vea is a guy that he's got to get himself in shape during training camp. And I think if he's going to miss contact drills, which he might, I think that's a potential issue going forward.
I'm more concerned about JPP having gas in the tank in December and January than him missing some time in training camp. That I'm more concerned about down the road than near. And the reason why I laugh when Steve mentioned JPP, the poor guy can't win. If it's not the fireworks, it's the car wreck. If it's not the car wreck, it's a knee. The poor guy just can't win in the offseason.
Well, when it comes to showing up Sunday, though, Steve, he suits up.
Oh, he's fantastic. He's fantastic. But it's a new mindset, Ira. We need him for 19 games. None of this 15 games and then plan your Dominican vacation.
You know, I like it, Steve. I like it.
All right, Ira. No vacation is complete and no Sunday or Saturday in Florida is complete without Big Storm Beer. Big Storm Beer, Florida's best craft beer, is brewed right in Clearwater. And it is extraordinary. We are telling you week after week about the Bromosa, their new tangerine IPA, just phenomenal. Ira loves it. And, of course, there are the other core beers, the Wavemaker Amber Ale, Tropic Pressure Florida Ale, another Sage favorite. And this is just great, ideal beer drinking weather, Ira. You could just sit back and admire that Saharan dust.
It's supposed to generate beautiful sunsets, gentlemen. Instead, I'm looking for a sunset. I'm coughing my guts out. It ain't worth it.
Well, then you can drink Big Storm beer inside. Get to their website, bigstormbrewery.com. Of course, you can head to their tap rooms, which are open, ready for business. Alcohol, beer, food, fantastic menu. The Clearwater flagship location is just south of Almerton Road in Clearwater, right near the jail, Ira, for your reference. And it is also their smaller tap room, fantastic, in Odessa, right off State Road 54 on Success Drive.
Right.
You'll be there all season long, and we're excited to fire out some of those details, especially when Big Storm in Clearwater opens its gigantic outdoor covered area, covered and
nice.
Outdoors, which is just going to be perfect for this wacky season. All right, Sage. Now, look, this is important stuff. I wasn't even going to consider bringing this up. Oh, but first of all, let me ask you a question. And I want to hear what Lee thinks as well, because this was brand new to me. So maybe it wasn't new to Bucks fans, but it was new to me. Ira Lee, Warren Sapp dropped on a podcast this week, and he talked about how in 1998, he got his big off-season contract, and he came back completely out of shape and wasn't ready for the season and learned his lesson. And then 99, he was player of the year. And then 2000, he was extraordinary. Had you heard him actually say that before, Ira, that he came back out of shape, just went crazy spending money all summer, having a good time, and wasn't dedicated because he had too much money to think about training?
Absolutely had never heard Sapp talk about it. By the way, the interview that you're talking about, I think I saw bits and pieces. It's like an hour and a half, guys. It's rather extraordinary. I mean, Sapp talks about his days at UM and playing under Weiss and what Dungy came in and talks up Gruden. And boy, does he love he loves John Gruden. He always looks at him as the guy to put the ring on his finger. And, you know, in between the lines, I'm not sure Sapp ever felt that Dungy was going to get that ring on Sapp's finger. And for that reason alone, he's got a tremendous amount of respect for the way Gruden challenged the defense. But as far as that 98 season, Steve, I've never heard him talk about that. Now, look, I got my own issues with Mr. Sapp, and I don't know if I've ever told this story, but I believe it was 2001, and that was a season that ended Dungy's time in Tampa and ended with a terrible loss at the Veterans Stadium in the playoffs when the Bucks didn't show up. But Sapp was not very effective that year, Steve. I don't have my computer in front of me. He did not have a very good season in 01, and he was hurt, but he played. He played through it. I think it might have been a pectoral, which is a serious injury. I think Brian Kelly had it once and it knocked them out for like 10 weeks. So that played through it, but it really robbed him of his power. You know, besides the extraordinary quickness, he had a lot of power. Wasn't very good. And then, guys, I don't know if I told this story, but at the end of the season, you know, I was working for the Tribune. I picked my all-Tribune team. You know, this is my all-pro team. I only picked two defensive tackles in the whole league. And I don't know, I might have picked Kevin Millard or something. I was looking for another guy. Well, there was a guy on the Jacksonville Jaguars. His name's Gary Walker. Gary Walker. Not a distinguished career, but that season, he had about 8 or 9 sacks, and he made the Pro Bowl. Well, I'm looking for a second defensive tackle, and I'm not going to pick Warren Sapp. He doesn't deserve it. Now, I did pick, you know, Rondé and Brooks or whatever, but no Sapp. All right, so it comes out. And, guys, I'm not making this up. He didn't speak to me for the next 4 years. 4 years. What I didn't know was not only was he pissed off that I didn't put him on the team, but he hated Gary Walker. Like, I'm supposed to know that. So not only did I pass him by, but I picked the wrong guy, in his opinion. He never let me forget it. He's mentioned it to me 10 years later. Hey, how's Gary Walker doing? Has he got his bust in Canton? What's going on? He never forgot it. And here's the end of that story. I'm not making this up. The first day of training camp, 2002, John Gruden's first camp and the first one that the Bucks held at the Wide World of Sports. Well, we're all out there. First day of camp, the Bucks send out, you know, John Gruden at the podium, Derek Brooks, maybe Brad Johnson, and Warren Sapp. And I'm sitting in the front row. And what do I hear from Warren Sapp after giving me all kinds of grief during the offseason about picking Gary Walker? Sapp goes to the podium and says, I cried myself to sleep after every week last year because I couldn't help my football team. I wasn't strong enough. I played, but I wasn't Warren Sapp. Well, then shut your pie hole about not making the all-Tribune team, gentlemen. And he keeps bringing it up to me. If I see him again in a couple of months, he might say, hey, how's Gary Walker doing, Ira? That's Warren Sapp. But I've never heard him talk about that 98 season, Steve. And I'll say this, and Lee, you know I'm right about this. That's the kind of nonsense where a guy lets the money go to his head that Sapp would have looked at another teammate and killed him right in front of all his other teammates, run him down, embarrassed him, saying, you ain't a football player. You didn't take it seriously. And what do we find out? Sapp did it himself, Lee. Did it himself.
Well, the first thing I thought of when I heard that was a couple weeks ago, Ryan Jensen said that happened to him. And he, you know, he didn't intend to play less or at a lesser level, I should say. And it happened to him. And he played awful enough that he said, you know, I got to get my head right here. And so, you know, when Jason Light says, I hate free agency, I think that's what he's talking about. The chances of you sign someone, yes, they're not going to play up to their normal level, you know. Generally, if a general manager says, I hate free agency, the fans will kill him because that's a vital – I mean, every decent team out there uses free agency to some degree to bolster their roster. So for a general manager to say, I hate free agency, that's a big red flag. But I know what he was getting at. He just worded it wrong, which is probably why he hates talking to the press, Jason. Because
unless he's
talking about, you know, goofy stuff, he's going to paint himself into a corner.
Maybe you could say it's part of human nature that you get comfortable with your second contract, which is a lot better than your rookie deal. But, Steve, doesn't that make it even more special for the players that never succumb to that, the Derek Brookses of the world, whose play never wavers through 14 seasons, all kinds of contracts, good and bad, and keeps that level of consistency? That's really special, Steve.
It is, and, you know, frankly, in the modern era of Bucks football, you've got Mike Evans. He didn't flinch once he got his money. Same thing for Levante David. Gerald McCoy was very consistent in his effort all the way through. You know, so there have been plenty of guys. But, Lee, had you ever heard that from Sapp before, basically
No.
coming out and saying that he tanked the offseason and screwed up his whole year?
I'm just going to say, I don't believe the Bucks made the playoffs that year, Steve.
No,
I don't
8-8.
They did.
8-8.
Yeah, 8-8.
Unless I read that wrong, I don't know that he came out and said he tanked, but that he wasn't as his usual self because he was partying too much in the summer. He's having too good a time spending money.
Yeah, I meant tanked his off season, and it caught caught up to him.
Steve, you cited so many players that they kept their level up, but I wrote Derrick Brooks. Did you ever see and get to know and meet and cover a more disciplined guy than Derrick Brooks in all facets of the game? I don't care what you talk about. The guy was so disciplined.
That's how you make the all-time top 100 list when they only picked about 12 linebackers, and Brooks is one of them. That's how you do it. I mean, that's special. That's a club within the club. Some people think he might, arguably be the best outside linebacker next to Lawrence Taylor. I mean, you could make that argument.
Wow, and Jack Ham, huh?
And Jack Ham. That's when he got called into Dungy's office, and Dungy looked at him and said, "You're going to be my Jack Ham," and looked at Sapp and said, "You're going to be Mean Joe Green." I mean, that's a lot of pressure, boys. That's a lot of pressure.
With Brooks, everything the guy did, everything, the way he tackled, the way he attacked preparation for a game, the way he handled himself. I mean, just everything about Brooks, just discipline, man, just discipline.
Excellent point, Lee. You know, one thing that Brooks used to say a lot, Steve, and I used to scoff at it. I said, that sounds good, but that can't be true. He used to say that he came to training camp every year thinking somebody was going to take his job. Now, you know, in retrospect, this is Derrick Brooks we're talking about, and that wasn't going to happen under Tony Dungy's watch. But that was his mindset, Steve. It does give you a little reveal into the way Brooks approached every training camp, even when he was a grizzled veteran, and a perennial Pro Bowl.
Ira, that's the way you need to come to training camp. You need to step it up, man. All right, listen.
I got young Zach on my boot heels over there, Steven. He's catching up to me.
Listen, Ira, one of the great stories that Derrick Brooks has told, and he, of course, told it to live on the air with the late, great Steve Dumig, the big dog, our friend. One of the most memorable stories I ever heard from Brooks was him talking about when he was in high school and how he was a straight-A student, but he intentionally sat in the front row in every single class because he didn't want anyone to think, in part because he was black, anyone to think that he was cheating getting those top grades, straight A's through school. He intentionally sat in the front row, took diligent notes. Imagine being 15 years old and having that kind of presence to, the discipline like Lee referenced. Crazy.
Crazy. And here's my best way of putting it. And I've been around Sapp and Brooks enough to say that this is not a guess. If you asked Warren Sapp, and I wish he would have been asked during that hour and a half interview, which is a hell of an interview, but if you asked Sapp, who was the better player, you or Derrick Brooks, he would say Derrick Brooks. And I don't think Sapp would say that about too many players in the National Football League. His respect for Brooks is off the charts, and you don't easily bowl over a Warren Sapp, Lee. You know that. He doesn't suffer fools gladly. He just thinks Brooks was the perfect football player. I didn't see Leroy Selman. I came in 85. I was greeted by Lehman Bennett and a 2-14 season. and he followed up with another 2-14 season, my first 2 years in Tampa. Thank you, Mr. Bennett. Thank you. But I also want to say that John McKay had just retired and Leroy Selman had just retired. So I didn't get to see Selman play on a weekly basis. But the best buck for me over 35 years is double nickel Derrick Brooks.
All right. Now, we are recording this podcast one day before the end of the month, June 29th, and unless something crazy happens, the most read story on JoeBucksFan.com this month, it popped over the weekend, and I never would have bet in a million years that this was the most read story on Joe Bucks Fan this month.
Oh, it had to be one of my columns, gentlemen. It had to be.
I'm sorry, Ira. But I'm going to tell you what that is, and it needs your feedback because it's so mind-numbing that I still don't even know what to do with it. But first,
now, this is the most viewed of the month or of the year so far?
Of the month, and one of the tops of the year by far.
All right. Does it involve a picture that Lee posted of Kay Adams? No.
Kay Adams, Ira. No Kay Adams. Ira, we got to tell everybody, with the end of June here, we are in peak summer, like everyone knows. And if you spot mold in your home, if you smell mold, if you think you have mold, if you had a leak and you're not sure if you got rid of the mold or there's stuff growing, you need to call Florida's Elite Restoration. Go to their website, just like it sounds, floridaseliterestoration.com. They are mold specialists. They will come to your home free of charge to give you a full analysis of what's going on, and they will handle your insurance claim for you, helping you get through that so you can get paid and get that work taken care of. Plumbers refer them all the time. They work with many great plumbers and are looking to work with other plumbing companies. They're local, they are excellent, and they're honest. This business, disaster business, if you will, when you have a problem like this and your home needs repair, is filled with a bunch of scam artists, and they are not one of those people. Florida's Elite Restoration is the company. They are a family company, top to bottom in the organization. And Ira, I know you have faith in Josh and the team at Florida's Elite Restoration, but I can't emphasize not to screw this up. I've been there. I've screwed that up, and I wish I had known about Florida's Elite Restoration.
You know, Steve, it's something where if you address it quickly, it's not that big a deal. If you let it go, you're looking at a major repair job. You got to stay on top of that situation.
Do not treat mold like the Buccaneers treat the running back's position. Contact Florida's Elite Restoration. Go to floridaseliterestoration.com ASAP. You can email them, call them 24/7. All right, Ira, let's get to that big story, which wasn't really a big story, but when I heard it, I dropped a big what the F, and I couldn't wait to get to rewind.
Lee, do you know what he's going to say, Lee? Do you know?
No idea.
Okay.
I'm sitting there driving around, Ira. I'm listening to ESPN University Radio or whatever on Sirius XM. Up comes Greg Schiano. And he's, you know, I'm listening to Schiano, and he's talking about, Rutgers and what they're doing, COVID-19 and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And the host says to him, hey, Greg, you know, what did you learn from the NFL that you bring to your players right now at Rutgers that you really learned and processed? And Schiano goes on to say, I learned I never should have left Rutgers. And he goes on to say, quote.
And 12,000 Buckfans just said amen.
He goes on to say, quote, of the Bucks, it was an opportunity that came about that I wasn't prepared for. And he took it because he thought that Rutgers might not have a conference, and he had promised the kids that he wouldn't take another college job, but he thought, I'm clean if I take the NFL job because I didn't promise that. And the opportunity was there. I took it. But again, Ira, I wasn't prepared. And, you know, Team Glazer should just refund some freaking money.
You know, Lee, let's give him brownie points for honesty, Lee.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have said, I hitched my wagon to Josh Freeman and he drove me off the cliff. I mean, he could have said that. I don't think that would have been fair, necessarily. It was part of the problem, but Schiano himself was a bigger part of the problem. He wasn't prepared. Lee, he was prepared to take the Glazers' money, Lee, and he was prepared to drive this team into a hole for two seasons, including the 2013 year, Lee, which was something that we have never seen before around One Buck Place. I think it's one of the most bizarre seasons of any franchise in recent NFL history. When Mercer, Lee, is the least of your problems, that's a hell of a bad year. Steve, did they start 0-8, 0-9? What the hell was that start in 2013? Brutal. Absolutely brutal. The Freeman escapade, the drug test, not showing up for the team picture. He wasn't named the captain. Here comes DeMaurice Smith. I'm going to have an investigation. Who leaked Freeman's drug test? We never hear another word from DeMaurice Smith. What a season, gentlemen.
Well, I could lay money who leaked Freeman's drug test. I could lay money.
I understand, but Lee, to say you're not prepared. I mean, what the hell? I mean,
I think at the time he probably thought he was. Now let's remember, Schiano at one point was an NFL assistant with the Bears. Yes. So he probably had an idea of what was going on in the NFL, and he probably thought, okay, I can handle this. And once he got knee-deep in it, like, whoa, I don't know. Or maybe in retrospect, after he got fired. Now, Steve and I, we had a backroom meeting with Schiano once. He brought us in. I'm pretty sure I mentioned this on the podcast, where we came through the kitchen, and I had flashbacks of Bobby Kennedy getting popped in the kitchen, going through the Sheraton Hotel in Los Angeles by Sirhan Sirhan. And I was like, okay, who's going to pull out the pistol here? And at the time, Seattle was absolutely 110% adamant that he was going to turn the Bucks around. He knew what was wrong. He was going to fix it. It was fixable. He was going to do it, and there's no doubt in his mind. And matter of fact, I think, I can't quote him, but it was off the record, but in retrospect, if I remember correctly, he said, there's no doubt in my mind. I mean, he was adamant. Like, if you were in there, you were like, okay, you can do it. He was over the top adamant. So, but maybe in, you know, reflecting, you know, fast forward a few years after Tennessee pulled the rug out from under him, maybe he was looking back and like, you know, I was not prepared for the Bucks.
You know, Steve, the irony was his first season wasn't that bad. 7-9. You know, Freeman was very good for about, 60% of the season. Then he fell apart. I believe the Bucks were in the playoff hunt, gentlemen, in like November. They weren't out of it.
It was the ninth. And, it was the ninth ranked offense. The offense wasn't the issue.
Yeah. But Freeman had a bad December, Steve.
If I remember correctly, Steve and I, we had a function at a it was Tilted Kilt at the time. They're no longer in business.
Nice.
It was a Thursday night game at Minnesota. Everybody and their brother thought they were going to lose, and they hammered Minnesota. Steve, do you remember that?
Yeah, they went 6-4, and then they collapsed and went 7-9. But, Ira, they tried to go down the stretch run with E.J. Biggers, Leonard Johnson, Laquan Lewis, and Danny Gorer as their secondary. Come on now.
What a memory you got, Steven. God bless you. That's outstanding.
Yeah, we're not blaming Josh Freeman for 2012. I mean, it was just a – but, Ira, the bigger picture. So, Schiano looks back, reflects back, and he says, I was unprepared. Well, who hired him? The Glazers, on the heels of bringing in Raheem Morris, okay, it was a good decision until 2010. They're the ones who decided, no, you go 10-6, you get no free agents, you get no coaching consultants, and that everything falls apart. Then you bring in Schiano, then you bring in Lovey, who was terrible hire. Schiano was terrible.
Schiano was not their first choice.
I don't care.
In 2012.
What does that have to do with anybody?
Ira, you're backing up Steve's point. Their first choice was miserable in the NFL.
Yeah.
Miserable.
Yeah.
He ran off so many people. You know, oddly enough, it wasn't far cry from Schiano. Schiano, look at all the players that he ran off.
We can't defend the head coaches hired by and large since they ran off Chucky. We can't do it. And we're not going
to. By the way,
that
was Chip Kelly I was referring to.
It was Chip Kelly. He was
terrible in the NFL.
All right, come on. Lee would say his first choice is Rachel Watson. What does that have to do with anything?
No, it's not an excuse. Steve, it's not an excuse for the Glazers.
It just made my blood boil. I feel like the Glazers should refund a bunch of money. It's upsetting to me. The head coach
Do you guys agree with me that we've never seen a year quite like 2013? That year should be in a time capsule somewhere.
Why?
Well, because you can bury it. You can bury it. That's why.
I don't think there's any Bucks fan out there like, gee, you remember 2013? Hell no, I don't remember that crap. What are you bringing it up for?
Steve, was it 0-9?
0-8.
0-8.
0-8 with the Mercer.
I don't think there's any Bucks fan that is warmly thinking of that season in any way, shape, or form.
You're right.
Hell, people get mad at Steve and I because we mentioned Jameis on the site. He's not with the Bucks anymore.
Ira, before we get to this last nugget here, all your work is presented by Bill Curry Ford. If you're shopping, just go to BillCurryFord.com, C-U-R-R-I-E, and it's a great shopping experience online. and you can get assistance with an agent online, or you can just, like I said, Sean Sullivan's email's on there on staff. You can send him a note, tell him Iris sent you like so many people do, and he will help you out literally as best as he can.
Now, hold on, Steve. Are we going to get through this podcast without you even mentioning the very controversial post in Joe Bucks Fan recently that said that suggests that the Bucks should ban all media from one Buck place? Are we going to talk about that, Steve?
Ira, what's controversial about it? I think most fans agree that in this year, well, why do we want to risk the health of the Buccaneers just so a bunch of media can be in there? It can all be done remotely.
Well, because the three of us are we sniff out the truth, Stephen. We look under crevices, and we like to be right on the scene, Stephen. And we're certainly not going to invest heavily in the pablum that we find at Buccaneers.com, gentlemen, which would all be positive, even if they start 1-4. They'll talk about the one win for 5 weeks. And I'm not knocking the website. I mean, that's the way it is across the league. But we don't have any reins on us, Stephen. So I was a little surprised, Steve. I was a little surprised to see that post. I gotta be honest. I was a little surprised.
Well, let's talk about it, Ira. If it's your podcast, it's on your mind. For people who didn't read it, I simply wrote up saying, you know what? This is a win at all costs season for the Buccaneers. We know what's going on with coronavirus. We know that media is going to be limited anyway at team facilities. They're not going to let media in the locker room. They're not going to, let media sit, get a huddle up with players or even pull a guy aside in the way that we're used to. So, you know what? What's the point? Why risk infecting anybody? Throw the science out the window and accept the reality that it's best for the team and the fans to have no strangers in there whatsoever. It's the best odds for safety. And the Buccaneers can rig a bunch of remote cameras. We can all sit around and watch training camp, and everything can be handled by phone if the media relations team is doing its job. So, you know what? From the fan perspective, I don't think the season's going to be ruined if, Rick Stroud isn't having a diet soda and talking to people. And the same for you,
well,
Ira. Same for you.
Lee, I guess I look at it from my 44-year perspective. In this crazy business that we call sports writing. And I never thought, Lee, that I would be assigned to cover a team remotely, Lee, by Skype or Zoom. But I guess those are the circumstances we find ourselves in. Lee, I'm not even sure the workroom will be open this training camp or this fall. It's another sad fallout from COVID-19 because – look, we don't, in a perfect world, we all want to be on the scene, Lee. We want to be there.
Well, sure, in a perfect world. Unfortunately, it's not perfect right now. I'm indifferent. I don't care. You know, they say you can't go. Well, I won't go. They say you can come in. Yeah, I'll go in. I'm indifferent. I think the only people who were hurt is the people who have websites that use it as a hobby and, who come out there once a week, maybe. I think it'll hurt them. But Steve said, I never thought of it before. What Steve said is absolutely correct, and I still can't believe why the Bucks haven't done this yet. It must be some NFL rule. They can rig up a camera real easy where we watch practices. I'm sure coaches probably don't want that, so we won't be able to, but they could do it so easily. It's no big deal. Then we have a certain security code to get in, to watch it online. It could be so simple. Now, I honestly don't know what the media policies are going to be. I did read the protocol that the NFL sent out about 3 weeks ago, and specifically they mentioned press pool, reporter pool. For people who don't know, that's usually 1, 2, 3 guys max take turns to be the eyes and ears for everybody. Super Bowl, for example, they have a media pool for practices.
Yep.
Peter King or Michael Silver or whomever, one of the big shots, they'll be the pool reporter. There's actually a pool reporter in the NFL to talk to referees. Not everybody's allowed to talk to referees, but a pool reporter is. Now, who decides who that pool reporter is? I don't know. How it's decided, I don't know. It sounds like Ira will probably be like you and a couple other guys will take turns being the pool reporter for that particular practice. It's not going to make a difference to me whatsoever.
Well, we did say this is going to be a season like no other, Steve. We did.
In baseball, if I remember right, baseball already is reporters can go and watch the game, but the only communication they have with players is, you know, through a phone call, through Zoom. That's it. So maybe that's what they do. But the NFL, I don't know. But
Sage, you realize if you go to $1, there's going to be 6 mandatory social distancing rules in effect. You're going to have to wear a mask. And if you break that, then you're going to get in trouble. So that means you got to stand you got to stand 6 feet away from Fred Goodall. What kind of conversation is that going to be? How are you going to talk behind everybody's back, Ira? Come on.
See, that's what I'm going to miss in that press room. And, of course, Lee knows exactly what I'm talking about, is the banter between me and Goodall. I wish we'd have this stuff on tape. I think we could sell it for $29.99. Fred's the nicest guy in the world. But whatever, I bring out the worst in him. Lee, am I right? I mean,
What's the worst in Fred Goodall? I don't even
put my computer on. And Goodall starts with his barbs. You're late, Kaufman. You're late. Where were you the other day, Kaufman? This is the most mild-mannered man in the world.
Nicest guy you'll ever meet.
I don't understand how I bring out the worst in people, Steve. How does that happen?
Well, Ira, when he's needling you, I notice there's always a smile on his face, so he likes you.
With remote cameras or streaming practice, which they could easily set up, they let the fans in to watch training camp anyway, and people can record practice all day long. I record a lot of practice just when I'm there, just to go back and watch it. Doesn't mean I'm reporting formations and all the stuff they don't let us report anyway. But for them to have a couple of remote cameras and just watch the feed, you know, it wouldn't be the end of the world. As crazy as it sounds.
Lee, if we're ever stuck for video, we got Kevin O'Donnell's drone from Fox 13. We're all set.
This gets me going off here. There is no segment of the population more paranoid than football coaches. I mean, the Secret Service is less paranoid. The CIA guys are less paranoid. There is no element of society more absolutely paranoid than football coaches. They're just, it's in their DNA, man. I'm shocked that they're able to sleep at night. They think someone's trying to break in their backyard to get a playbook or something. They are completely and totally obsessed, paranoid.
No, Lee's right, but even with that, they still allow filming of training camp practices anyway. And this year, you would have NFL Network wanting to film everything just in case something happens with Brady. It's not going to be like it's been in past years. But
you know that filming is done against their wishes.
Yeah,
you know they don't want
totally.
That. I mean, remember Pat Kerwin used to say they'll never sell practice or all 22. They'll never ever sell that. Well, they made a killing selling that. If it was up to football coaches, the only time you would ever see those guys, and Cutter threatened to do it once, the only time you'd ever see those guys is game day. That's it.
But
they are so paranoid.
Arians is a guy, Ira, who volunteered to be on that Amazon special, you know, to let everything be filmed. And so, you know, he might be somebody who's more into that. All right, Ira.
But he cracked down. He cracked down on us last year.
Sage.
I'm right here, baby.
All right. We're about to send you out of here. Lee wrote something. Chris Gronkowski, Gronk's brother, talked about how Gronk was so beaten up that the Super Bowl celebration that he was planning to have with his brother basically was canceled. He said that all he could do was, you know, walk slowly to the bathroom and take a leak, and that was the extent of their Super Bowl celebration. And, you know, it really illustrated how messed up Gronkowski was. Does that give you any sort of vibe or feeling?
You know what it speaks to? It speaks to the suggestion, and I think it's a good one. Don't overdo Gronk, you know, for the first two-thirds of the season, unless you're 5-7 or whatever. But if you're, you know, if you're right there in the thick of the playoff hunt and you want him fresh down the stretch, and certainly in January. Now, look, I'm not going to be a hypocrite. I don't subscribe to the Super Bowl or bust philosophy. That if the Bucs don't make it to the big game in Tampa, the season's a disaster. I just think that's crazy. But I will say that you got to make the playoffs. Otherwise, it is a disaster. And then I take my chances in the playoffs. So, yeah, he's a very physical player. He dishes out punishment. But, Lee, he absorbs a lot of punishment, too. And I want him fresh down the stretch. Because a fresh Gronkowski and a motivated Gronkowski, you'll see why he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. So I'm not surprised by that story, Lee. And I think Arians is going to have it in the back of his mind all season.
Well, that was a good illustration his brother had, even though maybe a little too much information that we needed, but it was a good illustration of just how beat up these guys get during games. Here's a guy who just won a Super Bowl, and we all know he's a party animal. He had to be helped to go to the bathroom. That's how bad it was. There was no celebration. In retrospect, I wish I would have been a little bit more nosy. Excuse me, when the Bucs played the Patriots a couple of years ago on Thursday night, I wanted to interview Brady because, you know, long as Jameis is with the Bucs, it's all he ever talked about. Brady. He loved Brady. And I wanted to talk to Brady about, you know, what do you think about that? Here you are, you're an old man, NFL terms, and you got a young guy, number one overall pick, that just gushes over you. What do you think about that? Well, when I went to go interview Brady, I was told, hey, he's going to be at the podium. He can go there. He's not here. Okay, fine. I'm walking out of the Patriots locker room. I'm not quite to the exit yet. And there's like a little off room, it, size of a real small office. Yep. The room was dark, but some guy was on a cot, like a first aid cot, like a table, first aid table.
Was it Ira?
Guy was flat on, what's that?
Was it Ira?
No, whatever. Guy was flat on his back, and the only thing he heard was, like, you know,
You sure that wasn't me?
It was like you hear stories about guys that are wounded in battle, you can't get to them, and the only thing you can hear is their moans. That's what it reminds, you know, I've never been in a battle, but that's sort of what I thought of when I heard, but the guy was just moaning out loud, and whoever was tending to him, there's nothing you could do for him. And I'm like, man, these guys just get beat to hell.
Was it Mike Smith?
No, there's probably some Bucs fan watching his defense after another. Just in case people don't read our stories, I've referenced this in several of my stories already. But Mike Smith was ahead of his time. Mike Smith was the originator of social distancing with his cornerbacks. The way he positioned them 15 yards off wide receivers, Mike Smith was the original practitioner of social distancing.
One of the great Mike Smith lines of all time. Well, we give them leeway where they can play a guy. What the hell is going on here? All right, Ira, you are going to send out Buccaneers fans. Of course, we have another podcast coming later this week, and people can subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Play, wherever. Leave a review, especially on Apple. We're on a little bit of a roll with some good reviews. Let us know what you think of the Sages podcast. We haven't called for those in a while. Let it rip, good, bad, whatever. And Ira, I looked into our podcast tracker that we have on the website. Haven't looked at it in a long time as it relates to where your readers are coming from. And you've had a surge, Ira. Your international audience, while it's not tremendous, it's there and it's diverse. The Canadians are just about ready to overtake those from the United Kingdom. The Canadians, you're making a surge in Canada. You've lost in Mexico. You still have just one listener in Panama, which used to be two. I guess you offended somebody in Panama. And
maybe they got the virus. Oh,
looking back at some of those numbers, you've dropped down to just two people in Israel. But Iro, send us out of here.
All right, this is a true story. I did something when I was at the Trib on the UK, you know, Buck fan club, and it's a big contingent. They put out something called Buck Power, which is a hell of a website. It's got a year-by-year review of what goes on with the Bucks. They use all these Tribune stories. They're all online. You can find them. Well, anyway, so I was talking to a couple of the guys that run these things, and I don't know, I was fascinated. I said, 32 NFL teams, you pick the Buccaneers, not the Cowboys, not the New York Giants, not the Patriots. The heck are you guys doing rooting for the Buccaneers? You're 5,000 miles away. The guy looked at me. I think we were in a bar. I think he raised a pint and said, Ira, don't you know the answer? We Brits love the underdog. That's all he said.